Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have the pleasure of having a guest from Denver, Colorado. Her name is Jane McCabe. We are going to talk today about a very special program that she's a part of in the Veterans Hospital in Denver, and she's being able to treat veterans with Reiki, and there are a number of different applications in this particular setting, and I'm really happy because, you know, we all are familiar with war, especially in the last few years, and the effect that it has on a human being. And I feel that there's a kind of distance that we as civilians have from what war really demands of a person who's a soldier, whether it's a male or a female soldier, and also what happens after they return and the re-entry into what we might call normal reality, which of course is very different for them. So, Jane, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Phyllis.
I'm really happy that you wrote me the email and shared with me some of your excitement and enthusiasm about Reiki and about your work in the hospital.
Well, this is an amazing opportunity. I appreciate spending this time with you and being a part of this series of and this program has been very educational for me as I listen to all of the other sessions. So I feel very honored. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. So the first thing I'm going to do is to ask Jane to speak a little bit about her own history in caring, because she was a nurse for many years and has gone through her own educational process with that, and then I understand met Reiki just a few years ago. So can you say a little bit about your...
Yes.
Did this start when you were a little girl and you always wanted to be a nurse, or was it a bit more complicated than that?
I think I was... no, it's about that simple. But looking back at a very young age, I was always a caretaker. I was the child that didn't ask for much, didn't need much, kind of took care of myself. And my mother would make reference to that. But I was the youngest of seven, so I got lost in the crowd a lot, I think. So about the age, I was a teenager, probably about 15, when I started to think about what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to do something that I could be independent and not dependent on someone to provide for me. That I always saw myself as, having a significant relationship and a marriage, and that I'd never be dependent on that other person to provide. So that was one of the reasons. It was very practical and survival based. But it also fit me. And I thought I was smart enough, and I thought I had the heart for it, and I thought I could work hard enough to be a nurse. So I latched onto that fairly early. My mother thought that I wouldn't want to work that hard. So I started out as a nurse's aide just to prove that, yes, I did want to do this and get a little experience. And sure enough, I just, it was really a fit. So I went into nursing and was a cancer nurse, an oncology nurse for 20 years, and specialized in that area and grew over time in that practice. And the phenomenal thing that I learned was was a privilege to be a part of is how this situation of illness and a disease that might take over one's life, tremendous healing could happen and tremendous empowerment could come out of that experience. And so it was a privilege to be a part of that in some way. And I always felt my role as a nurse was to support people as they experience that, and to be part of their supportive healing network, if you will. And that when I administered chemotherapy, it was really, for me, much more about getting them through that experience and supporting them the best way I could. And then, the technical aspect of it was a responsibility to do a good job with it, you know, and not to, it was always important to poke once, you know, stick the needle in once rather than 20 times, and to develop that skill so that I wasn't part of their suffering any more than I needed to be. And I think a couple of things happened. I went to graduate school, and in graduate school, I learned about pattern, and I learned about deep compassion. I learned sort of some of the words to go along with what I'd always known, and what was always a way of organizing it in my recognizing the paradigm that I operated under. And one of my favorite nursing theorists, which is what you learn in graduate school, is a lot of theory, a lot of foundational. Where does this come from? Where, you know, really, what is nursing all about? And it fits nicely with what you've been talking about, and what the teachings of Reiki are. So it's a very good fit for me. But I came to Reiki with an appreciation for energy, an appreciation of a caring milieu that gives people the support to heal. Mm-hmm. No matter what their circumstances, and coming to and having an understanding that no matter how horrific the physical situation might be, there's opportunity for this healing to happen, and this spiritual development that can happen sometimes overnight, you know. Mm-hmm. This just amazing thing, and to be a part of that is a privilege, but I'm in awe. And I learn about life. I learn about, you know, preparing for my own death through some of this work. Well, when I got out of graduate school, this particular position that I'm in as the palliative care clinical nurse specialist is an expanded scope of practice. So I have a lot of autonomy, and I do consultation where I give suggestions and recommendations, is the medical model term for it. Based on the assessment that I do, that's very thorough. So, but anyway, back up a second, and the job came to me. People who worked in this facility came to me and said, "Who knew me in the professional arena? This is the job for you." I had never had that happen before, so the job came to me, and I then became a palliative care clinical nurse specialist, working with people who with advanced disease, people who are in healthcare crisis in the ICU, and we're not really sure whether they're going to live or die, and then those people that are in hospice. And so I have the opportunity to work with people throughout the hospital system. I do some consultation. The people are in the home setting, are coming into outpatient clinics, but most of it is in the inpatient setting, in the nursing home or ICU.
Yeah. So I just want to get back to a couple of terms you've used, just to be clear for our listeners. Mm-hmm. The difference between hospice care and palliative care in your setting. Because mm-hmm. I know that I was confused about it, and I really appreciated your clarity around all this.
Well, the palliative care is quite a movement that's born out of a need, I believe, by the people that we work with and who seek support as they experience what they're experiencing. But palliative care is moving the hospice philosophy upstream. It's a paradigm that looks at the person as a whole. The unit of care is the family, the patient family rather than just the patient. It's not reductionistic like an acute care model is. It's more holistic. It's not about fixing broken parts, and it's not about death being a failure. It's about the last phase of life being a developmental task or phase of life that you have certain tasks that people can help you with. And so in palliative care, we move it upstream, and people who have a disease that is not going to be cured, and most diseases aren't, people live with them and learn to live with them. At some point in time, they begin to approach that final phase, which could be, you know, the last few years, it could be the last months or weeks or whatever. Hospice is sort of defined around the last 6 months of life, mainly because of the Medicare benefit and regulations around the reimbursement for this particular supportive care. Mm-hmm. So palliative care was born out of a need to move everything upstream, to begin the conversations earlier, to help people prepare for this important time. And we're there to guide and to bridge gaps and to help also other healthcare providers understand the importance of shifting gears to this other way of supporting people. And so it's great to see this happening. And
that's
people
wonderful.
Actually asking for it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And so another term that I would like to be just clear about in... because this is an international audience, when we talk about VA hospitals, what are we really speaking about?
The VA provides health care for veterans of military service. Mm-hmm. So the men and women who come to the VA, it's a part of a benefit package that is provided because of their military service. And there are different levels of benefits depending upon what their service was and their need. So everyone in our care has been trained as soldiers, served a period of time and prepared to defend our country in whatever way they're asked to do so.
Mm-hmm. So I feel that this group of people has some very unique characteristics. And I feel, it's been really interesting for me to approach this because, you know, in teaching Reiki and in treating people with Reiki, I find one of the most profound things is this word connection, this connection to oneself and connection to what in the past I would call this new age theory about everybody being one. And when I first started into Reiki, I would hear, you know, we are all one, and we would sing songs about being all one, and I would think, you know, well, that's a nice concept, but really, I don't know whether this is really true. And in the last 25 years, what I've learned is that for me, I've through my Reiki practice, I've had experience of being one. And this has been very profound for me. One of the things that I have noticed, though, and it is sad for me, is that as we train people to, quote, defend our country, which we won't get into that particular discussion, that I feel that the basis of military training a lot is to create a very specific connection that they have and to break what I would call in some way in their, in some part of themselves, this connection of oneness with everyone. Because otherwise, how could you possibly shoot another human being? Of course, they are shooting at you, and I would defend my own friends or my own family to the death. And I know that. I've been in that kind of emotional situation. But to sustain that over a whole period of years and so on has been pretty amazing. So I can imagine that your vets have some... I don't know. Can you relate it all to my theory?
Yes, and it's been my experience, and I'm learning about this. They are teaching me about this, and it's important to honor and respect the training that happens to prepare someone for what they might be asked to do. Is exactly that. Their training is dependent upon being able to connect the heart from the head. And to have a certain way to respond to threat, a certain way to respond to, and the idea of being able to take another human being's life is not innate in us, I don't think, unless it's a survival thing.
Uh-huh.
And oftentimes soldiers on the front lines, it's definitely a survival thing.
Definitely.
But what they found in the, I believe, I hope I'm not misstating this, but in World War I, the soldiers had trouble pulling the trigger.
Uh-huh.
So the training then had to encompass what would make a person pull the trigger. And they may not be able to pull it for themselves even. But they began training them with the idea of your unit, your comrades, your
uh-huh.
brothers.
Uh-huh.
Now we have brothers and sisters, but in the earlier
right.
conflicts, it was your brothers.
Right.
This is your unit, and no matter what, it is your responsibility to make sure you all come home.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that would make someone be able to do what was being asked of them to do.
So I'd like to just go back to a little bit about your Reiki history. And how long ago did you meet Reiki, and how did this come about? Well, kind of backtrack a little bit.
Well, the first time I met Reiki, I was actually administering chemotherapy, and someone came in with their friend who was Reiki trained, and Reiki'd the chemo, asked for permission, and Reiki'd the chemo, and Reiki'd the woman, young woman with breast cancer who was receiving the treatment. And I thought it was great, and I was very comfortable with that happening. I did ask if it was going to change the chemical composition of chemotherapy, and then we went about it, and I felt very comfortable with that going on. I'm familiar with, because of my nursing background and my openness to healing modalities, you know, the hands-on energy treatments,
right.
we call them, and the research that's trying to be done to describe that so that it's accepted in mainstream medical places. My Reiki master came to me to volunteer with the hospice patients and to be a deathbed volunteer for those. Had an interest in the military veteran. Her father is a World War II veteran, and there's probably other reasons. But anyway, came to me, and I was interviewing her, and part of her story was that she was a Reiki master. And something happened. I was very comfortable and told her that if she was interested in providing Reiki, that I would support that. There was certainly a need. And actually, in our early exposure to one another in the hospital setting, I asked her in some of my consultations, would she consider offering a Reiki treatment? So I was able to witness it a little bit. But she invited me, and she does these wonderful emails and put me on the email list. And so I was able to read about the history of Reiki on her email. And she was having a monthly support group where she invites guests, and I attended. So we probably met in August, maybe. I attended the support group. Maybe it was July, and I attended the support group in August and had my first Reiki treatment. And I was there. I asked her when the next class was going to be, and it was actually in September, and this was September of 2005. And I was there within a month, not knowing any more than what I just shared with you. And I knew it was just perfect, which it certainly is. And so I went through my first degree. I practiced as much as I could practice on myself and on others, and never missed a monthly support group with my master, and began to ask questions and learn more and dive into offering Reiki at work, which is a little scary in that, mm-hmm. that culture. But had the support to do that, and actually even formulated a little group at work of people that have had their first degree about the same time that I did from other teachers. And we would get together and try to give Reiki to one another there so that there was opportunity to practice.
What a great idea. You know, I hope that other people take that up too. Thank you for sharing that.
So then I said, as soon as you think I'm ready, Master, I would like to take second degree. I wanted to dive into this practice deeper and experience it on other levels. And I didn't know much about second degree other than I would be able to, which was fairly unbelievable to me, that you could send a distance
right.
treatment. But and also to have these symbols, and symbolism is very powerful, and I understand that. My husband is an artist who uses a lot of symbolism in his work, and so I've learned to respect the power of symbols, mm-hmm. and so I was attracted to having that be part of the practice. And so whenever she felt that I might be ready, and she thought I was ready in a year. So, and she had told me that it would have to be at least a year. And so I was prepared for that. The second degree came up. And before that, I believe I audited the first degree again. So I would go into the second degree with fresh, a refresher course, and did that. And wow. There's a lot I could talk about each one of those experiences and each initiation, but it's great. And then I gave some distance Reiki. My sister actually, it lives in California, and she had a detached retina. And I talked to her about having this healing technique.
Uh-huh.
And I told her when I was going to do it, and she was very interested in whatever might help. And it was so interesting to give a distance treatment to her. I had a deep connection to her and a deep love for my sister. And so it was very safe for both of us to do my first distance on a loved one. And it was interesting that I was able to sense more emotional things. Then that was my first experience with these different levels of feeling, for lack of a better, the energy of a physical condition versus an emotional condition versus spiritual distress, which I'm able to sometimes feel that. And I was able to confirm with her. She was very upset. She was fearful that she wouldn't be able to see to drive.
Right.
And in Southern California, if you can't drive, forget it. You know, life is over.
Right.
And so, anyway, it was quite emotionally distressing to her, much more so than having the surgery or not being able to see. And so that was sort of interesting for both of us.
Uh-huh.
And then I was a believer in distance. Began sending Reiki into my everyday as part of my Reiki daily practice, and feeling great comfort with that.
That's great.
And
that's great.
So, anyway, that's my story to date.
Uh-huh. So you are a consultant in your hospital, but it sounded like when we were speaking earlier that now you're also a consultant of Reiki in your hospital. So you do treat people in the hospital, but do you actually have a program that you and Harmony have set up in the hospital, or?
We have a program for training volunteers for hospice work that we developed a curriculum for, and Harmony helps with the teaching, but not for Reiki.
I see.
Yeah, not for Reiki. To date, anyway. we were involved in a Reiki study. Harmony wasn't involved, but she sort of gave me some advice that I could share with the development of the study, and I believe we're going to have more Reiki studies, maybe with the post-traumatic stress disorder population,
right.
And chronic pain and post-traumatic stress population. We've been talking about putting together a study,
mm-hmm.
Because a study gives us the opportunity to provide that professional experience.
Right.
That may lead into setting up clinics or setting up more opportunities.
Uh-huh.
Right now, I'm able to integrate and offer Reiki as a part of as I move through my daily practice.
Uh-huh.
And I have the autonomy and the support to be able to do that. So I don't have a special Reiki room.
Uh-huh.
I am offering Reiki treatments in ICU surrounded by lots of technology, which
uh-huh.
is an interesting thing, in a psychiatric isolation room.
Uh-huh.
And kneeling on the floor because the bed can't be raised,
right,
because they can't have a bed that has a cord because they might commit. So it, under very interesting circumstances that Reiki is able to support me in strange positions to be able to do this. And
great.
Yeah, wherever I am, and I do have the, I'm a mobile nurse that does consultations wherever I'm called to do them, then, you know, Reiki goes with me, and I don't offer it to everyone. It seems to call it, the person, Reiki guides me.
Great.
And it finds, people find me.
Yeah.
People that I haven't ever talked to find me.
That's wonderful. Jane, I'd like to go to your specific experiences in the hospital. Perhaps we can, perhaps you have a couple of experiences that you'd like to share with us. I'm just wondering if one comes to mind at this moment.
Several do, and there are many, and each one seems very powerful and important. But in my work with people who are, I'm going to start at one end of the spectrum and move up if we have time. With people who are actively dying, and they're in the actively dying process, so they're in their last hours,
right?
Maybe the last few days of life. And it's distressing for people to observe sometimes because there seems to be a bit of a laboring at the end of life like we had at the beginning of life. And I'm learning that that may not be cause as much suffering as maybe onlookers think it might. That transition is part of it. But some people do struggle, and many of the population I work with have a lot of lung disease and a lot of heart disease, where the heart is failing, and so the heart isn't able to pump, and fluid backs up into the lungs, and the lungs aren't able to breathe. And so we're rounding with an interdisciplinary team of a physician, a nurse, a social worker, and a chaplain, and sometimes students of any of those disciplines. And I witness someone, and I get the what I refer to as the Reiki calling, and I may put my hand on a person's chest, and oftentimes these people are not alert enough to have conversation for consent. So the consent needs to be energetically. And like an animal or a baby, they'll throw you off if they're not interested in it. But I'll put my hand on their chest and maybe a hand on the forehead. And witness a calming, and witness an evenness of breathing and a deeper breathing. And that might be for a minute or so. And that is also witnessed by loved ones who are vigil around the bed. And importantly as well, my peers from other disciplines. And they're comforted by the ability, because people witness this and feel helpless and feel awkward and uncomfortable. And Reiki helps me reach in with comfort. And by doing that, providing comfort, a milieu of comfort for others around. So that's one end of the spectrum. And then there are people who have had some experience from previous treatments who I've received permission that when the time comes, are you interested in receiving Reiki to help you with the transition? And they will let me know up front.
That's great.
And then, of course, I have to feel that consent at the time.
Right.
But so that's one end of the spectrum, and one that is quite professionally satisfying.
Yes, I can imagine.
And helps me to combat compassion fatigue, which is a occupational hazard in the work that I do. Then moving upstream, there are those people that are making transitions from sort of a curative mindset to now I'm in hospice. Maybe they're having to go from home because they don't have a caregiver at home, and home hospice isn't there all the time. They come and go, but they reach a point where they're not able to care for themselves in the home setting and have to come into an institution and are grieving the loss of their life, the way it was, but their independence and their home and their history seems to be cut off when they have to come in for inpatient care. So Reiki can help with that transition, and I can offer it at that time. Or maybe there's a crisis, a symptom crisis, which palliative care is often called in to help with. Maybe a spike in pain or a spike in existential pain or a spike in emotional pain within a family unit or something. And so I can offer Reiki at those times. Now, some of the more interesting things, because you would expect me to offer Reiki in those things, but Reiki will come to me and I will have a request from the psychiatric unit, which has probably been the most interesting. And I guess interesting from a surprise standpoint, that suddenly my practice is reaching into these areas. And so often they're young men. Mm-hmm. There has been a few Vietnam veteran era, but Gulf War, Iraqi and Afghanistan soldiers. And not all of them have been in combat, but certainly when you're in a combat zone,
yes,
you are very affected by what is
psychologically there. You're in combat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so they come in broken physically because they've had traumatic brain injury, or they've had their bodies have been thrown around, or they have suffered back or neck injuries from whatever. And so chronic pain. And peripheral neuropathies and things like that. And nothing helps, nothing works. And they reach this emotional state of this dark place of hopelessness and end up in the psychiatric unit. And I'll either get a formal consultation through the consultation process to help with pain management. And as part of that assessment, if it feels right and it seems appropriate, I will offer Reiki as part of the intervention. So these are the medications that I would recommend we try, or adjustments in the medications. I really like non-pharmaceutical interventions to help people in the wholeness of their healing, whatever it is. But also the recognition that we suffer trauma in the whole. So our main symptom might be emotional, or our main symptom might be physical, or a main symptom might be a spiritual, but every cell in our body is all of those going on at once. And we become ill in the whole, and we heal in the whole. And that's why Reiki is so powerful in the healing process, because it hits all of those levels. And drugs will only help certain synapses.
Right. Right.
Don't do
right.
too much for spiritual
right.
healing, and don't do too much for emotional healing. Sometimes it can create the milieu for the mind to sort of straighten out a little bit. But it also brings part of that military training we mentioned in the first segment, is this separation of heart and mind and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And Reiki helps reunite that. And the veterans will actually share that with me.
Mm, beautiful.
And there have also been a few people that have had pain syndromes starting out in the ICU, and where no one really knows what the etiology of the underlying cause of this particular pain syndrome. Those are the perfect people for offering Reiki and providing Reiki. And I had one instance that sticks out in my mind, if we have time in this segment, of a young man who was a Gulf War veteran, and he wasn't in combat, but he was there. And that was an early conflict, that there wasn't many casualties
right.
and things like that. But anyway, he had this horrible out-of-control pain in a pain crisis, and we were giving him narcotics enough that would do almost anyone in, and it wasn't phasing his pain, which he was in so much heightened pain that you couldn't get and touch him, and clothing and sheets hurt him. And so he wasn't too keen on the idea of me actually touching his skin, and I started out with, and he had several pain syndromes going on, gout and gout flares and in this peripheral neuropathy and deep organ kind of, he had some things going on with his intestines. And so this young man actually had cardiac arrest twice while he was in the hospital, in and out of the ICU, went to surgery.
Wow.
And over the course of three, and ended up in physical rehabilitation to get back on his feet again. But to make a long story short, over the course of 2.5 months of hospitalization, I was able to intermittently offer him Reiki. And on his last treatment, his graduation, getting out of the hospital and leaving on one pill once or twice a day for his pain,
great.
From huge doses by constant intravenous intervention, he told, we had a new nurse researcher who was interested in following through with another Reiki study. So she asked if she could, on the next person that I gave Reiki to, could she come along? So rather than talk too much about it, I just brought her along, asked for permission for her to be there as I gave him his Reiki treatment. And by this time, he was very, very comfortable with talking about his experience. And so he talked about the experience with her, and he said some very interesting things. He said, which he had never shared with me, but he had shared with her, one of them was that with Reiki, some of his pain, wherever it was stuck, and that was his word, wherever his pain was stuck, would leave and never come back. And it was different than a pill, because you take the pill and the pain can be lessened or leave, but after an hour or two, it's back. And with certain subtle pain, pieces of his pain, they left and never came back. And to him, that was incredible. So that was one of the many things that he shared. But the wonderful thing in my practice was being able to do it over a length of time.
Right. Well, I know that that's probably unusual to have a length of time, because these guys often aren't in the hospital for
a long time.
Earlier, before we actually started to record, Jane told me this beautiful story about a man that she treated, I think, in the psychiatric ward. Could you share that with the listeners, please?
Yes. I was asked to consult to help with pain management. He was a young man, let's say early 30s, who is a veteran of the Iraqi war, and had an accident where his cervical spine and his lumbar sacral spine were injured.
Mm-hmm.
And has had chronic pain since. And so he was struggling with that and stated the reason for his depression and his attempted suicides, which had been 4 or so, with medications, that the reason was this pain. The first treatment I offered, when I did my consultation, I offered it to him. And then I always follow up. I let him think about it. And then I followed up, and actually I went up there to follow up with him and let him know about some of the recommendations that had been implemented that we had talked about. And without me asking him, he looked up at me and he said, you know, I'm really interested in that Reiki. So we got permission from the nursing staff, and we went into his room, and I gave him his first treatment, which he felt immediate. He had bad headaches as well, this very throbbing headache that's pretty much constant. Hadn't slept for weeks, maybe months, more than an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, he thought. So hadn't been able to relax. And after his first treatment, he was very open, very trusting, had a full treatment of an hour and 40 minutes.
Wow.
And he was comfortable with front and back and head to toe and all the standard hand positions, and felt that his back felt better. But more importantly, he felt relaxed. And there were other things happening, some subtle changes, and I told him we'd talk about it tomorrow. And so when I came back, it was the next day or in 2 days, and he said that he had been able to sleep until 2:30 in the morning, and he was very interested in one more session. And His wife was visiting, and it was an important time for them because there's limited visiting hours. And I invited her. I said, "Is this a good time, or should I come back?" But it was actually my only opportunity. It was the end of the day, 5, 6 o'clock, and I needed to do that or come back the next day. And so anyway, we went into the room, and the wife was present, and I gave him. He was much more trusting. I love it when loved ones are there, because they're able to even relax into it much more, because they have this watchful eye on this unusual thing that's happening to them. And so, I allow them to ask questions. They silence if they're comfortable, but if the questions arise, then please ask them. And so she had some questions, but she was pretty comfortable as well and quieted after a lot of chat. And he relaxed so deeply. And it's wonderful to be a part of such deep relaxation and feel that under my hands. And he, before I left his head, his headache had gone and wasn't there anymore in the second treatment, which he had not been free of a headache for weeks. And then by the time I finished up, he was snoring and completely relaxed and out. And I look over and I let his wife know that we were finished, and that I felt compelled to leave him in this deep, relaxed state. But I wanted her to know to be careful when he stood, and to watch him. He may be a little unsteady because I wasn't able to balance him in the full way that I like to before people get on their feet. And so she was crying. Tears were streaming down her face, and I asked her about those tears. And through her sobs, she said she had not seen him relaxed, that relaxed, for a very, very long time. And thanked me, and just couldn't thank me enough. And so we left the room, and he remained relaxed and sleeping, which she hadn't seen, and she couldn't remember when. And went out into the hallway. Of course, the nursing staff were there, and there were a couple of other patients who were very interested in how could they get some of this Reiki treatment as well. Wanted to know how to spell it so they can look up on the internet and ask their doctors about it. So it was very wonderful to be a part of that. And before I got finished with all the questions in the hallway, he did get up and join us and thank me again. And then I was going to be off a week. So I told him I'd like to give 3 treatments, and we would figure out a way for that 3rd treatment if he were interested after I returned to work.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you for that beautiful story. It says a lot about a lot of different aspects of Reiki practice. So, Jane, one other aspect of Reiki practice is, what about you? What are the things that you've discovered as you've been having these profound experiences with Reiki?
There are very many. One of the things that I mentioned that as an occupational hazard in working with people who are in a state of fear, oftentimes, and trauma, and confusion about relationships and the history of those relationships as they're trying to sort of wind up their life and they're running out of time, it's very intense. And in these medical settings, in these hospitals, the energy is it's tense. And to go through that without being touched by it, I've been working on it now for 28 years, and every year I find ways of navigating that, because if you don't survive. And I have moments where it does begin to make me physically or emotionally ill, or spiritually distressed. And so I have to have self-care techniques, and Reiki is so perfect because it helps me on all those different levels. But I give myself a meditative, sort of a chakra Reiki in the morning, and my Reiki gratitude prayers, and I send Reiki into my day. Mm-hmm. And I start that way, and I feel so protected, I guess is a good word, and fortified with that. And as I go through my day, being able to offer Reiki treatments, I'm hungry for it sometimes when it's been a few weeks and the situation hasn't been right to bring me and another human being together in Reiki. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm getting stressed out and I'm tense and I'm, you know, it's harder to get to sleep at night and my stomach's in a knot because of just all of the things. And I'm having difficulty with some of the difficult people in my environment that are difficult to interface with. And it's all mounting. And then I can go to Reiki or in Reiki or with Reiki. And for some reason, with another human being is a different power, a different healing that happens as this flows through me and through the other person than when I'm only giving my own treatment. It's that human connection that that has an element of support and healing that is different. Both are important, but it's different, and I find... wow, I hope somebody comes to me that's appropriate for Reiki because I really could use that. And when that's happening, all of those other things melt away. Mm. And when I come back into the situation, I am calmer, more able not to get caught up in all of the nonsense and all of the noise and all of the chaos and all of the things that don't seem to make sense. And there's clarity and there's a groundedness that is good for me and my survival and my practice. It's renewing, but it's also very good for those around me.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. Thank you very much, Jane, for this wonderful interview. It's amazing that it's ended. Yes. And we'll be thinking about you in Denver. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.